Thank you. So, it's a pleasure to be here, and actually, maybe I should start with a little, really sort of, it reminds me of good memories here because last time I was lecturing in this room in the afternoon of, I was finishing a paper with Greg Lawler on the universality for Brownian exponents, sort of basically where we ended up saying, well, if we want to compute the exponent for Brownian motion, it's actually the same, proving that it's the same for percolation, and we're sort of sitting in the office 4 to 6 or something on the second floor and printing out the paper, and then we were just saying, well, you know, we should the good object to compute the exponents is, should be actually the scaling limit of the percolation interfaces because this one is nicer. It doesn't go back into this thing. And then we heard a beep on the computer, and it was a mail by Oded saying, "Hi, I finished my paper on defining SLE. And by the way, I can, if you compute a little bit when kappa equals 6, you can actually recover Cardy's formula. So maybe this has to do with the scaling limit of percolation interfaces." And that's how it the sort of the SLE and Brownian interaction story started. So that's everything happened in office 426 at some point for us, for me. And so I hesitated a lot before sort of deciding what to talk about today. And I think. Okay, I decided to use the fact that I have several, that I chose to give two talks in order to say more explicitly certain things that were sort of implicit in some earlier papers or work, and also to show you some new facts concerning sort of nice measures on self-avoiding loops. And so there are different motivations to do this. Well, one motivation is maybe because just it's a nice and natural problem, and just for the sake of looking at these questions. Another question is to make sense and to make sort of the SLE and all this framework work also on compact Riemann surfaces. Sort of what, how do you do with you if you're on compact Riemann surfaces? What sort of measures are you going to use and mathematically, what can you do? And also on other Riemann surfaces, and so therefore my talk will be related, but with a different approach to the talk of Robert, I think, and the papers of Robert and Roland Friedrich, and to papers by Makarov and Zahn on SLE on Riemann surfaces, and Zahn, a paper by Zahn on his own, and also. It will be related in some sort to some aspects of what Julien Dubédard is going to talk about, and so I thought would be useful to sort of give this, spend at least the one first hour to describe this thing. And of course, last but not least, my main motivation is to understand the self-avoiding walk and to prove things about self-avoiding walk. And I'm not going to do anything like that in these lectures, I warned you already, but I still have the hope that what I'm going to talk about is going to be useful and to say something on self-avoiding walks. And so maybe I should start recalling you one version of the conjecture about self-avoiding walk, and the version is the following. Okay, in that form we wrote it with in the restrict well in what the Mandelbrot symposium paper with the Greg and Oded, but it was sort of more or less implicitly, or more implicitly, or more or less explicitly also stated in the physics literature before, so that's not a. But basically, there's this general framework idea, or that if you're looking for a uniform measure on self-avoiding paths of a given length in the on a given lattice, then this measure should converge when the mesh of the lattice goes to zero or the length of the path goes to infinity. And it should converge to some conformally invariant measure on path. And one nice way, I think, to phrase the conjecture would be basically, so choose your favorite lattice, sort of square or triangular or whatever, And if you count the number of self-avoiding walks of length n that you can draw on your lattice, it's very easy to show that this number, at first order, the number of self-avoiding walks of length n. So I'm sorry, because I realize that the audience is a mixture of sort of experts and also people who are. Sorry, I could just skip saying just the connectivity constant, but maybe it's useful that I sort of don't lose part of the audience at the beginning. Number of self-avoiding walks of length n on a given lattice, this will explode at first order like some lambda to n plus little o of n when n goes to infinity, and this number here is the connectivity constant of the lattice, right? And this, so of length n started from 0 to 0. And the conjecture would be, say, define on your lattice a measure, so take delta times the lattice, so a lattice with mesh size delta, and define mu delta, which is a measure supported on self-avoiding polygons. So you have a very thin lattice, say delta z squared, and for each self-avoiding polygon of length n, so n, so this is gamma, n of gamma is the number of steps of gamma, and you're going just to decide that the mass of one given self-avoiding polygon is just lambda to the minus n of gamma. And the conjecture is, I think that's the nice thing about this conjecture is that you are just defining in the plane. You don't have any prescribed point. You don't have any object. That when delta goes to zero, this converges to some nice measure mu on self-avoiding loops. And that this measure is conformally invariant. So with conformal invariance properties. So one way to phrase the conformal invariance property that you would expect, so mu now would be the following. It's just take a finite, I mean a bounded domain D, an open set D, and phi, a conformal map from D onto phi of D, which will be D tilde. And the conformal invariance would be basically, in this context, would mean that if you take the image measure under mu, under phi of mu restricted to those loops that stay in D, that you get exactly the measure mu restricted to those loops that stay in phi of D. And that there's no scaling factor. Right. So basically that you, in each domain, D, you have a measure supported on self-avoiding loops in this domain, and that this is actually a conforming invariant. So that's one motivation and behind what I'm going to say. Yeah, I forgot to say another thing is, one motivation, of course, is also to relate the story to the sort of welding problem of complex analysis. And, of course, choosing a measure on self-avoiding loops has to do with the way to glue together two disks in a random way. Okay. Okay, so ideally, if the conjecture is true, then a measure like that that satisfies this property should exist and have nice properties. So now, the first simple observation maybe I should say the following. Most of what I'm going to say is not written up, except on my laptop, maybe. But a substantial fraction of the ideas and of the on the tools and results. Also, we'll be using these results that are in the Brown and Loop paper that are on the my lecture notes on conformal restriction and also the papers with Oded on the conformal restriction. So it's good that Greg hasn't arrived yet, so that he knows most of what I'm going to recall now. But this simple observation—I mean, this simple observation is not written up anywhere, I think. But it's a very elementary thing. It basically goes the following. So suppose. So I'm sorry for those who heard that already in advance, this little observation. Suppose that mu satisfies is a measure on self-avoiding loops satisfying this for any d and phi, right? Then, well, let's put it this way. There exists at most one measure mu on self-avoiding loops satisfying star. So that basically, and when I say just exactly one, sort of up to multiplication by positive constant. Of course, if mu satisfies the property, two times mu satisfies the same property. So, and the proof is elementary. And just uses some simple, I mean, basically the ideas that are behind the definition of SLE, actually, the fact that if you have something that is defined in any domain and that is conformally equivalent in any domain, you can sort of just explore the measure mu. And the way you're going to proceed is basically, first of all, okay. Mu is a measure on self-avoiding so by the way, so just a little comment is that the measure mu is scale invariant, of course, because multiplication by a constant is a conformal map, and therefore because it's scale invariant, you see that it has to be an infinite measure because you put a certain weight, the same weight at every scale. Right. And it's also, of course, a shift invariant because if you translate things in the and another thing I haven't said here is that when you put a measure here on self-avoiding loops here, you don't prescribe the given starting point on the loop, right? It's just the picture, and you put a weight n on, which is of course what you do when you are in physics and look for an interface and look at the energy and that's okay. So therefore, because it's and because of conformal invariance, it suffices to describe mu for gamma restricted for d for a given d. If you take one domain d, right, and you know the measure mu restricted to those loops that stay in this domain d, because of conformal invariance, you can always map d onto any other domain, simply other on any other simply connected domain, and then you get the measure mu restricted to those loops that stay in this other domain, and therefore you get all the measures because every loop is contained in one simply connected domain. If you know the measure mu restricted to one given domain, then you know the whole measure. And by conformal invariance, it also suffices to describe, for the same reason, mu restricted to, say, zero in, is inside gamma, and gamma is in the unit disk. So I choose the unit disk. Okay. And so if you restrict yourself to those loops, that's around zero in the unit disk, you can always map conformally that onto any domain and any point inside that domain, and therefore, because each loop has a point in the inside and it contains some domain, you know this is sufficient to describe the measure mu entirely in the whole plane. And now, so what do you need? What information do you need in order to characterize a measure on self-avoiding loops that are separating zero from the unit circle? Actually, the only information you need in order to characterize a measure like this is that basically, if I take a domain that is smaller than the unit disk, so that I cut something out, so this is U prime, smaller domain, well, let's take U tilde, sorry. Right? And actually, if you know is inside gamma, gamma is in U, but gamma is not in U prime, if you know this for any U prime, U tilde, then this characterizes fully the measure mu, right? Basically, if you have the information about this about this that says for any U tilde, what's the mass of the set of loops that actually go out of there, right, but stay in U and surround zero. So this is a set of possible observables, right, that is stable under intersection, right, and that generates the sigma field that you are using to describe this measure, and therefore by elementary sort of measure theory, you see that if you have this information, if you have two different measures that share the same information here, then they are identical. Okay. So if you know this for any U tilde, then you have the information about the measure. No, it's a measure, right? Yeah, it's not a probability measure, so I'm not allowed to say the probability, but it's the mass of the set of. Okay. I don't want to go into sort of. There's no problem with the fact that it's infinite measure. There. Okay. Now the question is, if you have a measure mu, it will be fully described by something like that. Right. And now you just think a little bit about it. Well, if I have, I cut something out here. So this is U tilde. Now I have a conformal map that I call phi that maps me back onto the original disk. So 0 goes to 0, phi goes from U tilde to U, and 0 goes to 0, and we don't care about the, we can take a horizontal derivative at 0. Okay? And now we take another one, U hat. Okay, this will be phi tilde. And here you have phi hat. Maps you back onto the original domain. Okay? And here you have the pre-image of U tilde under phi tilde, so okay. Now you want, this is a function of U tilde, right? So you might as well say that this mass is a function of the actual of phi tilde instead. I mean, phi tilde or U tilde are two different ways to describe the same thing. And here you see immediately that, so let's call this quantity A of phi tilde. Right? Now, if you want to look at A of phi hat phi tilde, right, this is the mass of loops in the unit disk that intersect either this yellow part or this white part. So you decompose this into two two possibilities. Either it goes out of the white one, right? And this is right. Or it doesn't go out of the white one, but it hits the yellow one. And so here you get that this is just mu of zero inside gamma. Gamma is in U tilde, and gamma is not in phi tilde minus one of U hat. Right, so U tilde just is the complement of this, right? So you just decompose the mass of those that intersect either this or that into two independent parts, into two parts, and of course, because of conformal invariance, if you map what you observe here by phi tilde, this is just mu zero inside gamma. Gamma is in the unit disk, and gamma is not in u tilde, u hat. So this is A of phi hat. Okay, so you have the semigroup of conformal maps. You have the functional A that is additive, and then it takes just a very little effort to actually say, well, there's just one possible functional that is fairly regular on the set of sets U, and this you get that there exists a constant C such that A of phi is C times log of phi prime of zero. That's the unique candidate that you have at you. Like, the idea is basically, well, you can always sort of approximate any set, any conformal map phi by iteration of removing a infinitesimal straight slit just by Loebner's theory. And therefore, if you have this information about what the mass is of removing infinitesimal straight slit, then you have a the information about the whole measure mu, and this mass is just this constant here. Okay? And therefore, not only here, you not only have a sort of something saying that there's a unique candidate for such a measure mu, but you actually have an explicit simple formula to describe fully the possible candidate, which is the measure mu should satisfy that for some constant c, the mass of loops, etc. But we haven't said at this point that this formula actually describes that there exists such a measure, right? Maybe we are trying to construct something. Maybe our conjecture is too strong, and maybe such a measure doesn't exist. And on the other hand, if such a measure exists, then it's a good indication for the fact that the conjecture might be true, because that means that there's a nice continuous object there. Now, yeah, maybe I forgot to say a very simple observation, because I'm not sure that I'll think about it later, but if you sort of restrict your measure and sort of you condition your measure onto the one half sort of you know the information about how the curve gamma starts, and then you look at the mass of all others, then you have this conjecture for actually sort of self-avoiding walks in a given domain from one boundary point to another. So that in some sense, if you construct this measure on loops, in some sense you will construct also a measure on things with fixed boundary points as well. Okay, so this is a simple observation, and then, well, is it possible to construct such a measure, sort of existence? Yes, it's possible to construct a measure satisfying this property. So here, by the way, I'm going to come back to that later. And there are different ways to proceed. Okay, sort of, and I want to I'll start with the Brownian loop measure. Sort of that's in our paper with Greg on the Brownian loop soup. Even if we don't say that it has to do with this. Okay, anyway. The Brownian loop measure defined with Greg. And okay, I want to move on, so I'm not going to make a comment on that. How do you define such a thing? A Brownian loop measure is first of all define sort of a rooted loop measure at Z and C. So the idea to def so you fix the point Z. Okay. You take a small epsilon and you start a Brownian motion, say, at Z plus epsilon. Okay. You start a Brownian motion Z plus epsilon and you wait until it hits the disk of radius epsilon squared. Right. So if you think a little bit about it, well, first of all, I want to remind you that Brownian motion is conformally invariant. So if you take the conformal image of a Brownian path, you get a time-changed Brownian path as well. Especially, so that's useful to take sort of hitting times like that instead of fixed times. And so now if you, because of the fact that log of the absolute value of Z is actually a harmonic, in the plane, it's very easy to see that if you, what's the probability that if you do this, and epsilon is very small, that you will observe something of diameter, say, between 1 and 2. Well, first of all, you have to go, the Brownian motion has to hit the circle of radius 1 before the small one, but because you have 1 epsilon squared, this probability is 1/2. Right? And now once you're at radius 1, you have to go back all the way to radius epsilon squared before hitting the radius 2. Right? And that costs you, that is just 1 over log of 1 over epsilon, right, this probability. So you take mz is the limit when epsilon goes to 0, and you compensate by log 1 over epsilon times the measure on Brownian motion here, right? And if you do this, right, you get the measure, and you take the limit when epsilon goes to 0, it's easy to see that you're going to get a limit, a measure on path, that on Brownian path, that starts from Z, comes back to Z, and the mass of the actual path of size diameter between 1 and 2 is going to be finite, right? So that's the right way to compensate the stress definition. And then because of conformal invariance of Brownian motion, if you restrict yourself to set to those loops that stay in a given domain D, right, so if Z is in D, phi is a conformal map from D to D tilde, that if you take the conformal image of M under Z restricted to those loops that stay in D, then you just get this. This is basically more or less immediate, because if you apply conformal transformation, you start from epsilon will be changing epsilon times phi prime derivative at Z of the conformal map. This one will, epsilon squared will be this thing squared. But anyway, this will not affect the log of a 1 to the epsilon compensation that you have in front, and therefore you just have conformal invariance in an easy way. Okay. So that's just a straightforward consequence of the actual conformal invariance of Brownian motion. And now you're going to define the good measure, the nice measure. Mu, okay. I call it mu, even if it's not the same as the previous one. It's just you integrate the starting point according to Lebesgue measure in the plane, and then you take m of z, so it's a product measure, right? That's what I mean by that. Product measure, and then you weight this by 1 over t of gamma, where t of gamma is actually the time length of the loop gamma. Okay, so here you have an infinite measure on on Brownian loops, started from Z, ending at Z. You take the product measure with sort of your starting point, you choose uniformly according to Lebesgue measure, whatever that means, but it's just an infinite measure. So you, and then you weight this by according to this time. And actually, because of, if you choose a Brownian loop like this, you can actually always sort of, the measure here is always a stable under reparametrization. I mean, choosing the starting point at different points. So the nice measure here is a measure on loops where, but where you don't prescribe, you forget the information about where the starting point is. Right. So here, this defines your measure on loops started from a given point, which is Z, the one you choose there. But then you erase this information. You take the equivalence class of loops given this. Yes? Well, it's the time of, you have a Brownian loop, right? So M defines your Brownian loop. And that's the time taken that the Brownian loop takes to make one full. And so because of these sort of, because of this invariance, so let me just come back to comment on that. So what you're doing basically, you have the starting point here, and then you have this measure on loops that you take, Brownian loops that you take here, and then you erase the information about where the starting point is. This gives you a measure on actually unrooted loops in the play. And because of course, you see that if I see this loop, somehow the starting point could have been anywhere on the curve, and actually uniformly with respect to this time parameterization on this curve. And therefore, you could actually choose, actually, equivalently, because of this remark, you could define this measure by integrating d squared z, nz, and here any function of z and gamma, as long as for any gamma, on the support of this measure, the integral from 0 to t of gamma of f of gamma t gamma dt is 1. So what I'm saying that here, in some sense, if I see a loop, given loop, the location of the actual starting point, in some sense, is distributed uniformly on the loop. But you can actually change it and distribute it in a little bit different way. As long as the total mass is 1, you're fine. Okay. So actually, one example if you take your domain D, you take your conformal map phi from D to D tilde, you might take F of gamma T gamma would be phi prime of gamma t squared over the integral, sorry, f of z, okay, you just weight it a little bit differently according to actually the so you define this for any, for each loop, you replace this 1 over t by this for when gamma is a subset of D. Right? For all the loops that say in D, you just replace, you slightly skew the actual location of the starting point. Well, then, if you apply a conformal transformation here, sort of phi times mu restricted to those loops that stay in D, so these are Brownian loops, then you see immediately that this is just phi, the image under phi, under the integral over D of D squared Z, phi, the image of, well, nz, and this thing over here, phi prime of Z squared Okay? And now, because of conform invariance, what you see is that this is just the integral over, so you say y would be phi of z, right? This times this is just this, right? And because of conformal invariance, the conformal image of this is just m over, so here. In y, take the image under conformal map phi of those loops that stay in D and start at Z, and then you get just this. And this here is just the time of the loop phi of gamma as a seen as a Brownian loop. Right? That's the new time length of the actual loop under conformal transformation, after conformal transformation. So I don't want to, and therefore this is just mu restricted to those loops that are in phi of gamma, in phi of d. Okay? So this little, so I just wanted to describe this because usually this sort of proof of the loop measure conformal invariance is not, it's not self-avoiding, right? So this is, that's the problem. So I should have called it something else than mu. Who asked the question? Yeah. So this measure is not self-avoiding at all, right? That's not the actually right candidate. However, now define mu defined for any gamma for any Brownian loop. Gamma, okay, now if you define gamma bar, which is the outer boundary of the loop, in the sense that you have this Brownian loop here, and now you have this outer. Right? This is gamma bar. So you have a measure mu on Brownian loops, therefore you have a measure mu bar, say, on self-avoiding loops, just by taking the image on the map that maps gamma to gamma bar. And then you see here that the measure on gamma bar defined by the Brownian loop measure satisfies this for any simply connected domain D, right? And the reason is just, well, it's sort of obvious because gamma satisfies the same thing. Gamma satisfies that if I take the image of the measure, conformal image of the measure supported on those loops that stay in D, I get exactly the same measure restricted to those loops that stay in phi of D. Right? So the same is true for the exterior boundary. Okay? Yes?
When you start setting up the signal,
right? So, okay. The first part was saying, yes, there's a unique measure, at most a unique measure defined on self-avoiding curves, right? Then I started to describe the Brownian guy, which is not a measure on self-avoiding curves, otherwise we wouldn't be thinking about all this business here. And this defines a measure satisfying the same property, but then if you just focus on the outermost boundary of this guy, you're happy. Now, well, and that, this raises one question, of course, because on the one hand you take the outermost boundary, so it's not symmetric because it's the outermost boundary in some sense, right? And now, and this goes into the same question saying, well, does the measure mu that you define in this way, is this guy invariant under inversion? Which is take the inside out. So that's what I want to prove to you now. So, by the way, there's another, of course, this has to be true if the previous, if indeed this is the scaling limit of self-avoiding curves, because then you have invariance under excursion, under inversion. It's just defined as a local thing. And actually, sort of, it will tell you sort of a lot of things about this measure mu, and I want to exploit that later on. Now, okay, so far so good. We're looking for a measure satisfying certain property, and then we find one. We're happy. Actually, there are other ways to define a measure like this, and what I'm going to write it down here is to use the scaling limit of percolation, right? Define a measure mu, right? Where basically, imagine that the scaling limit of percolation is given by a probability measure on families of clusters, right? A realization would be something, you keep just the information about the actual, say, the outermost perimeter, or how it's called, of each percolation cluster defines a self-avoiding loop, right? You keep this information, and then you say, well, the measure mu is just the expected number given by the expected number of such percolation clusters. What I'm saying is that for any set A, just a remark, A is a set of self-avoiding loops, right? You could define mu using the conformal invariance of the scaling limit of percolation as mu would be the limit when delta goes to zero of the expected number of clusters in critical percolation realization in delta z squared. Okay, we have to be careful whatever that means, such that the outermost parameter. So again, you have this cluster, which is this complicated thing. You just keep the outermost guy like you did in the percolation thing, is in A. And conformal invariance of percolation and the fact that percolation is something which is defined locally just tells you that this guy is going to satisfy the same thing. So in particular, it's the same measure and the one as the Brownian loop measure, if you just focus on the outermost boundaries. Okay, so here, of course, you have to use Smirnov's result about conformal invariance and a little bit more by saying that the outermost hulls converge to measures on paths, so you have to work in the spirit of what Kamiya and Newman did to improve a statistical result. Okay, so, but I'm not going to use this percolation description, even if at the end I'm going to come back to that in order to say things about percolation and Riemann surface, compact Riemann surface, and things like that. Okay. Okay, I'm running out of time very deeply, so let me start with a remark which is in the spirit of the uniqueness proof I described to you before. And the remark is, you have this measure, say, you are in the upper half plane H, and you have a measure on self-avoiding loops in the upper half plane. And actually this measure, and that's sort of what we did in this loop soup paper with Greg, this measure can be sort of discovered progressively along a Loebner path. So imagine that you have a path gamma, eta, right, up to some time t, right, and now you want to describe mu restricted to those loops gamma, so mu in the upper half plane, restricted to gamma that stay in the upper half plane and intersect eta. Right? So again, because of the conform invariance, what you will see is that first you start with those that intersect the very first part here. You either you start, you hit here, or there, and sort of they you discover them so that each time you hit one, you discover it. And because of the conform invariance and the property this restriction type property of mu, basically if you map yourself back by the map phi t, right, that sort of removes the slit and sends phi t of eta t to zero, and phi t of infinity to infinity, so it normalizes the derivative at infinity, and phi t of sort of h minus eta up to time t is h, right? So you map conformally this thing back onto the original domain. Basically, at each step, you're discovering something new here. It's just like discovering something new here. You're doing the same story, always repeating the same story. And therefore, what you see is that you can actually describe the measure, can actually describe the, this measure on loops by saying that mu restricted to those loops that stay in H and intersect the slit. You can integrate with respect to the time of the Loebner chain t. So of course here the time parameterization of the Loebner chain is the usual one, parameterized according to capacity at infinity, so that you always repeat the same procedure each time you iterate infinitesimal slits. And this is just dt times phi t minus 1 of the measure, so the image under phi t minus 1 of the so-called bubble measure at 0 in H. So what I'm saying here is that there's a nice measure, so bubble measure at 0 in H. There's an infinite measure on self-avoiding loops started in the upper half plane, started at 0 and ending at 0 and touching the boundary just at 0. And so basically what you're doing is basically this loop here, right, will appear, so say here this is t, will appear this time, t, at the pre-image under phi t of the bubble that appeared here. Right. Now, there are different ways to describe this bubble measure, and I can refer you to the Loebner paper or to the conformer restriction and related question notes I wrote, or there are equivalent ways to describe this bubble measure. So yeah, one thing I should warn you that throughout the lectures I'm not caring about multiplicative constants. And you have noticed, I said already, mu is defined up to multiplicative constant. And here I don't care about defining what the actual multiplicative constant here, or how, if the different measures I'm defining, so here for percolation and for the Brownian loop soup, are actually what is the multiplicative constant. And by the way, this is not a trivial fact to actually identify the right multiplicative constant that show up in the different constructions. But so there are at least three different construction of this bubble measure. One construction is saying start the Brownian motion at I epsilon, right? Stop it when it exits the boundary between when it exits the upper half plane, and take the limit when epsilon goes to zero of epsilon minus 2 times this measure here when you restrict yourself to the exit through 0 epsilon, right? You start the Brownian motion from I epsilon. You stop it when it exits the upper half plane, and you say you win only if you are exiting it between 0 and epsilon. Well, for the same reason as before, it's basically easy to see that the right normalization, in order to see something macroscopic with finite mass, is epsilon to the minus squared. Because the Brownian motion has to go away, it costs you epsilon, and then it has to hit exactly between 0 and epsilon, it costs you another epsilon. And you take this limit, and then you get this Brownian loop measure. Another way is to just say, take a SLE a third, and deliberately it's the only moment I'm going to talk about SLE, and I'm not going to use it. Take an SLE a third from 0 to epsilon, and take epsilon to the minus squared, so the probability of an SLE a third from 0 to epsilon. And these two things are equivalent. If you have read our restriction paper with Oded and Greg, you know why these two things are actually the same. Because here you take the outermost, yeah, I forgot to say that. You take this limit and then you take the outermost boundary. And there's a third, okay, there are two other ones. Actually, my preferred one uses a Poissonian cloud of Brownian excursions, but I don't want to, of boundary excursions. That's by far the one I prefer. But there's another one, maybe this is one of the simplest one for you at this point, since I'm out of time. You have a reflection angle of 3 pi over 8 here, between 0 and epsilon, always pointing towards epsilon. You start a Brownian motion, a reflected Brownian motion from there, with this reflection boundary angle here. So you start it here. When it hits the boundary, it's reflected with a certain rule here. And because of this reflection angle, what happens is that it will hit epsilon at finite time. And then again, take the limit of epsilon minus squared of actually the inner boundary, right? The boundary sort of, say, containing epsilon over 2 here, of what you observe. And again, because of the, you have to take epsilon to the minus squared here times this probability measure here, because the probability to, of course, if epsilon goes to 0, what you observe is going to get down to 0. You don't observe anything, but the probability to observe a macroscopic thing here between these two things is actually you have to decay like epsilon squared, so you compensate it, and that's what you see. And here you see that here you have the outer boundary of some guy, right? And now we end up with the inside boundary of some guy. And these two things are equivalent, these two curves. Okay? And so it will be useful to use this description of the bubble measure. Because you see, the Brownian motion started from here is just a Markov process. So imagine that now you focus on what happens if you have a hole here. The Brownian motion, if it surrounds the hole, it cannot go through it. And therefore, whatever the shape of the hole is inside, or if you perturb things in a conformal way, it will not feel the sort of inside perturbation. And therefore, that's going to be sort of the reason in the end of what I'm going to say. Well, I hope maybe now, but I'm trying to explain you now that, in fact, this measure mu is invariant on self-ordering loops, is actually invariant under conformal transformations, even for non-simply connected domains. So what I'm want to do now, so by the way, a little remark that you get out of all this, of course, is pretty clear, that if I take that the scaling dimension somehow of this bubble measure is 2, right, sort of that if I multiply the if I take the image of this bubble measure under sort of a conformal map phi, then the bubble measure will just be multiplied by phi prime of 0 to the power squared, right? It's just because you change the epsilon squared compensation to phi prime 0 epsilon squared compensation. So the idea now, I'm sorry, I'm going to be a slight, is that okay if I'm taking a bit more time because I put different marks and I want to now collect them all before. So now I have a domain here with the upper half plane and I have a hole, A. Right? And now you have another hole, different shape, A tilde. But we choose them in certain way that the conformal radius of the annulus, which is here and there, are the same. Okay? So they have the same size seen from the... Okay. And now you take a conformal map phi, where phi is a conformal map that maps, say, infinity to infinity, and h minus a to h minus... Now, this description here of the bubble measure tells you immediately that if you take the image under phi of the bubble measure at zero, restricted to those bubbles gamma that surround A, this is the law of the inside boundary of a Brownian reflected Brownian motion started from zero, stopped when it hits epsilon in finite time. And you restrict yourself to this configuration so that this boundary, this green boundary, surrounds A. Because of conformal invariance of the reflected Brownian motion, you immediately get that the image of this is just a bubble measure at phi of zero of indicator function of gamma around A tilde. And you have the scaling factor, which is phi prime of 0 squared. The scaling factor comes just because you change epsilon to the minus squared into epsilon phi prime of 0 to the minus squared. I mean, the point 0 and epsilon are going to 0, I mean, phi of 0 and phi of 0 plus epsilon phi prime. That's first order. Okay? And actually, if you think a little bit about it, you could actually replace indicator function that gamma surrounds A and surrounds A tilde by the indicator function of that gamma does not hit A or does not get hit A tilde, because those loops, for those loops that stay, that don't go around A, so if you look at just here and you have A, and the other one you have this loop here and you have A tilde, if they don't surround it, that means that there is some deterministic guy here that connects this to that, and gamma does not hit this or that, and conformal invariance also works. So, so now we are going to use this description of the loop measure, but so proposition somehow. Or theorem, say. I don't like this word, but anyway. Now, take phi of mu, so this is the loop measure of loops, subset of H. Gamma intersects eta. Oh, no, that's just, sorry, not no eta here. Gamma surrounds A. So you take the loop measure in H. You have A here. You have this loop measure, and you just restrict yourself to those that go around A. Take the image under phi, and then this is just the measure on loops in H such that gay surrounds A tilde. Of course, A tilde has the same size, roughly, right, than A, because the conformal modulus is the same. No, just one word about this. This tells you, in some sense, this tells you that for any conformal annulus, the consequence of this theorem is that for any conformal annulus here, the weight of the set of loops that go around this annulus is just a universal function of this conformal radius, right? Because the total mass, just by identifying the total mass here and there, right? And since it's just a function of the conformal radius, and conformal radius invariant under one of the Z transformation, the consequence of this is that the measure mu is invariant under inversions. That you can always, it's the same measure defined inside or outside, because it's just a function of the conformal radius of the annulus and not about the information about who is inside or who is outside. It's symmetric inside each there. And now, so how do you prove such a thing? Okay, now I have you, oh no, maybe I'm still there. We're going to explore this this according to a given eta. So the picture is reminiscent of sort of conformal restriction type pictures. So here you have a given curve eta up to time t. Here you have phi and you have a. And here you have a tilde. And here you have phi of eta t, right? Capital phi. And this now is a Livner chain in the upper half plane, but the capacity is not t because phi is screwing up our capacities. So we can reparametrize it in such a way that to say that this is eta tilde up to time, some time s, where s will be the right time parametrization of this Livner chain that you take as the image of phi. Okay? And here actually you see immediately that, okay, so now here I have phi t, which is the conformal map that removes the slit back to zero. And here you have, so this is phi t of a. Here you have phi tilde s, which is the conformal map that removes this guy. And here you have phi tilde s of a tilde. Okay? And here now you have a conformal map, phi capital T, that goes from the complement of this into the complement of that. Now, what you see here is very simple. You take mu, this measure mu, restricted to those loops gamma that surround A, and hit eta up to time t. And you take the conformal image under phi of this guy. If you want to, if you're happy, so as a measure, right? What you would like is that the conformal image here is just exactly the set of loops mu in the upper half plane before the same loop that surrounds A tilde and hit this guy, right? Now, you're just saying, well, this is just the integral between 0 and t. You discover sort of the bubbles. Phi t minus 1 of the bubbles at 0 here, restricted to those that surround phi t of a. Okay. So here you just keep those bubbles that surround this, and you map them back here. And then you take the image here. So now instead of going this way, you go this way, and you see that this is, so it's phi of this measure. it's the image on the phi of the measure defined in this way, and phi of phi t minus 1, and so you get just integral between 0 and t of dt, and now it's just phi tilde s of phi t minus, okay, so it's of the bubble measure at 0 that gamma surrounds phi tilde s of a tilde, right? Take the bubble measure here, and you go this way now, you know, in this thing. This is just because of the what I wrote down about the properties of the bubble measure. I wrote it down. somewhere. This is just phi prime t of 0 squared times the bubble measure at 0 in gamma. Sorry, this is phi t. A. So surrounds phi tilde t s of a tilde. Okay? Just take the image measure under the bubble measure here, phi t, and then you have this phi t squared guy that shows up. And now you're happy because this phi t squared is exactly what is needed in order to go from t to the time parameterization of the Loebner chain eta tilde. So you get ds phi s minus 1 of the bubble measure. Right? And so now you're happy because this is just mu in the upper half plane, so just gamma surrounds a tilde and hits eta tilde of 0. Okay? So sorry about running over time, but that's all. If I start writing this proof tomorrow, I would be in trouble. We'll have to repeat half of today's lecture. And so this has nice consequences because basically now, as I told you, this measure mu, and I'm going to come back to that later, in some sense, if you focus on, it's defined in an intrinsic way somehow, because the measure mu restricted to some thin tube here, so if you restrict yourself to just those loops that go around this very thin tube, this measure is defined sort of just depends on the sort of complex structure inside this thin tube and not at what is away from the curve. Right? So it's some sort of amazing fact that you can change the conformal structure inside or you can change the conformal structure outside and the measure is not affected by that. Right? I'm going to, of course, this is not surprising if you think about the initial thing about the fact that this is the limit of this measure on self-avoiding loops. Because the measure on self-avoiding loop is defined in an intrinsic way with respect to inside or outside. But in some sense, it tells you that this measure is much better in some way than the Brownian loop measure or the percolation measure because it has this additional symmetry inside-outside. And that makes it possible because sort of for this measure to say things about representations, about weldings, about all sort of things, because it's really sort of just gluing together two disks in a random way, in a way, right? And so you're getting much closer to some of the ideas developed in sort of conformal field theory with this idea that you cut something out, you change the complex structure inside, and then you glue and you try to see how things are distorted by changing the complex structure of the surface somewhere. And, okay, I'll try to say more about that tomorrow. And it has sort of amazing consequences about the shapes of outer boundaries of Brownian loops. And I'll try to say that in a moment, also tomorrow. It's sort of very strange consequences. Like the symmetry, but not only the symmetry, that we have different ways to define the measures on Brownian loops. And, okay, and tomorrow I'll explain to you why this is actually sufficient also to this. Allows you to define the measure in any simply connected domain for any number of holes just because the loop just has an inside and an outside, so the loops, okay, I'm going to say that. And it works also on compact surfaces. Yes? Yes. Yes. However, okay, no, not however. But here now you see that, okay, I'm going to explain that tomorrow, but here you have this measure that you can view in some sense as intrinsic self-avoiding conforming, a measure on self-avoiding curves in the plane. And in some sense, the discretization, you can view the discrete self-avoiding walk as just, it takes this measure mu, and then you just sort of have a sort of tiling of the set of possible self-avoiding loops by sort of approximating into discrete objects. And if you have sufficient independence between what happens at different positions of your self-avoiding loops, which is something you have some control on by looking at SLE approaches, say, you might be able to say something that, okay, it's not, I'll say more, a bit more about that tomorrow. Thank you. Sorry for being over time.